All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. We hope all of you are having a fantastic morning or evening, because no matter where you're coming in from, you're in the right place here today. Got another awesome guest in store for all of you, because today we have Brendan Seto. He is an initial contributor over at Core. Brendan, it's good to have you. And I got to be honest, I think you're the first Brendan that we've ever had on, at least one that I've ever had on. Which is a bit of a weird intro for me, but nonetheless, great to have you, man.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was good to be jamming before a bit, getting your insights on the market, and the Brendan connection is always funny. You were joking how interesting of an email thread that'll be with three Brendans.
I know it's weird because I don't feel like it's that common of a name, but nonetheless, I guess one way or another, we find the way to meet up with each other, or maybe just crypto just attracts the Brendans, and it's why we're all
a funny
here.
Story. My last startup, the first guy I hired, you know, there was two of us. Our first hire is named Brendan, so it was just like, you know, the history repeats. So no, it's pretty funny.
It truly just must be the space. But you know, all banter aside, you know, we truly are glad to have you here. Excited to talk all things Core in the markets and what's happening here with crypto as a whole, but specifically, you work a lot with Bitcoin. And so the people have all sorts of conversations. And the cool thing about this pod is that we get to bring in people from all different backgrounds with all different opinions. And some of them disagree a lot. Some of them really agree a lot. And so there's people who come on and they just are, you know, they believe, hey, Ethereum's the only way, or Solana's the only way, or Bitcoin's the only way, or, you know, some people believe, hey, it can be a mixture of all of them. But we love to get everyone's kind of viewpoint and perspective, because you guys are building, right? Different people can build different things and they can all be successful. But we love hearing from the founders and the builders and the contributors to the foundations of crypto, and understanding why you're thinking what you're thinking and what's kind of moving those decisions. So again, excited to be able to dive into all this. Can you just give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself? I mean, man, you've been working with this stuff for a solid bit now, and would love to just hear about what got you started.
Yeah, so more on the personal side, and then I guess we can jump into Core after, is what you're thinking. Yeah, sure. So I'll try and be, I'm not that great at talking about myself, so I'll keep it pretty short. So basically, I've been in tech 15 years now. Yeah. Have had a couple of successful companies before joining Core. Before this, just did a SaaS business where I was founder CEO. So I scaled that for about 10 years in the construction SaaS space, and sold it to a group that went public a year later on the NASDAQ. So that was a really cool experience, taking an idea to an exit, and then stayed on. And I'd always been interested as a hobby in crypto. So if you were a technologist in the early 2010s and, you know, worked in the Bay Area, et cetera, you obviously had heard of Bitcoin or different cryptocurrencies. And I'd like to just dabble on the side and follow the technology. I could never really incorporate it at the time into the last company, because it just wasn't there yet. But I was always just playing around. So after I sold my last company, I took some time off, and it kind of coincided with DeFi summer. So there was a lot of just really interesting utility that was being built that was a bit different than just pure token speculation. And it got me really excited as someone who's considers himself like a worldwide citizen, permissionless finance, you know, non-sovereign store of value with Bitcoin, where you know, can't be controlled by a centralized state. That stuff really spoke to me. So yeah, I was just dabbling and got connected with some old colleagues. I shouldn't say colleagues, but just friends, acquaintances that were working on the Core project. You know, I think there was about 5-10 people at the time, and joined about 3.5 years ago to help take that product from 0 to 1.
Well, enter Core, right? I mean, Core has been, you know, building out all sorts of different kind of features in related to Bitcoin. And I think that's something that interests a lot of people, because when they look at Bitcoin, they think, oh, you know, Bitcoin really doesn't have any utility, or there's no options. There's no DeFi. There's none of this if you're just looking at Bitcoin and how it's normally is. But one of the big purposes that you all have been focused on solving is, how can we make Bitcoin more than something than you just kind of like send and receive? right? So for the listeners out there who maybe are newer, they haven't heard about you, can you give us just a full introduction to what you've been working on and what you've been doing over at Core?
Yes, I think you teed it up pretty good. So appreciate that. You know, at the end of the day, it was, like I mentioned, GeFi Summer really was kind of a catalyst for what could be built with smart contracts. As you mentioned, Bitcoin, the asset, is incredible. Hard value, non-sovereign store of value, massive market cap, by and far the most adopted and most held crypto asset in the world, right? Led the ETFs held by governments. No other currency comes close. But the network itself is pretty simple, right? That's part of its benefit as well. But right now, basically, you can send, store, and receive Bitcoin, right? It doesn't have smart contracts, doesn't have that ability. So that's why Core was created. Basically, you saw Bitcoin adoption growing around the world. You saw the rise of what smart contracts could do. And, you know, create with different apps and DeFi applications for people all around the world. And the push was, yeah, that this Bitcoin's getting more and more adoption and people want to put it to work and do things with it. But you can't do that on the Bitcoin network itself. So we created Core, which is a layer one blockchain that is secured by Bitcoin. So specifically Bitcoin miners also participate in the Core blockchain. They help secure it with their mining hash power. A lot of detail there, so I'll just keep it high level, but they help secure the chain. And then as a Bitcoin holder, you also secure the Core blockchain by staking, which we'll get into. So you can, it's kind of like completely aligned with the Bitcoin miners and Bitcoin holders who can earn if they're helping secure the chain. And then it's EVM compatible. So it opens up a bunch of use cases and ability to program and build utility for Bitcoin, like a lend borrow market, perpetual markets, NFTs, etc., that you can't do on Bitcoin itself. So the thing is, you bring your Bitcoin onto this blockchain and you do things with it that you can't do on the Bitcoin network itself.
Yeah, which is, I think, inherently valuable, right? Because one of the takes that we have over here is that everything should kind of be developed and invented and then make it a free market and then allow people or give people the ability to choose from there. So they're saying, hey, if I just want to do kind of DeFi and some of these DeFi purposes on Bitcoin, let me have the ability to do that and I can choose to do that. Or if I want to go do it on Ethereum, fine. You know, if they want to do that, they can go do that. But I think giving the people the ability to just be able to interact with Bitcoin like this is, again, I think valuable because there's a lot of people out there who just say, hey, I want exposure to crypto, but I don't necessarily want to get too into the weeds with everything. I don't want to have to go and learn all the blockchain technology, and I don't want to have to go learn all of the different jargon that's involved with it. I kind of just want to get, maybe own my Bitcoin. And that's a lot of people out there. And then later on down the road, they say, well, now I kind of want to get a little bit more involved. You know, I heard I could stake Ethereum, or I could earn yield on Ethereum, or I could do DeFi on Solana, or all these other things. And they end up just wanting to stay with Bitcoin. And so I think that's where something like Core comes in, is for a lot of these people that just have Bitcoin, you know, maybe it's passive, maybe they're, you know, actively managing it. I think it gives them a bit more variety. And I would actually even argue that that kind of increases not only like awareness, but also like liquidity in a sense, right? You kind of are opening up Bitcoin to a new, maybe demographic of people, saying that, you know, the people who do want more DeFi, you know, whatever that may be, because there's a bit of variety that can be involved in that. You're essentially opening the doors to them and saying, hey, we have something for you too.
Well, ultimately that was part of, like, it's not the main mission, but when, you know, most companies or you know, foundations have mission vision statements. That was included in one of the original missions, was to accelerate Bitcoin adoption. Yeah, we'll see if that's panned out. I think we still have a lot of work ahead of us. Project's still pretty early, but thing is, you add more and more utility to the asset, it'll increase adoption and make it a bit more useful all around the world, for sure. And yeah, we're seeing, I mean, after having launched 3 years ago at this point, being with the project 3.5, there's like specific use cases with retail folks around the world who just, you know, hold a Bitcoin or 0.01 of a Bitcoin. And then you're seeing actually most of the major pushes coming from institutions. And by institutions, that's, you know, companies that own Bitcoin on the balance sheet, hedge funds, trading funds, you know, the folks that are basically using custodians, right? Or the custodians you're going after for their business. So yeah, some interesting learnings there on both markets.
Well, I wanted to go through a couple of data points that I pulled. I was doing my homework before we started. And I saw three things that stood out to me. Number one, you guys are the first yield-bearing Bitcoin ETF. I mean, you have that. Number two, you guys had the first self-custodial Bitcoin staking product with over 7,000 BTC that's staked in it. That number might be higher now. And then number three, you guys are the number one Bitcoin DeFi blockchain with over $500 million in TVL. Just walk me through, I guess, all three of those in the overall role. Did we miss anything there?
I mean, a couple of things. So I think some of the stats have changed. Obviously, macro got smoked with the 1010.
Yeah.
1010 piece. So TVL is down a bit. But by and large, the Bitcoin ecosystem with the most apps and utility built on it and funds. I think at one point there was actually $1 billion in TVL, which was a pretty crazy how it ramped just over a couple of years ago. But all of what you mentioned kind of stems on this innovation that we had, which was non-custodial Bitcoin staking. And I mentioned this before, the chain itself can be secured by Bitcoin stakers. Very similar, but very different. It's interesting to think about it similar to proof of stakes chain, but it doesn't quite work that way. So what's interesting about this is you can stake Bitcoin by time locking Bitcoin in your own wallet. And what's great about that is you basically time lock your Bitcoin for a period of time, whether it's a day, 10 days, a month, or a year. And you delegate it to the core blockchain, right, to help secure it. And you earn core block rewards for doing that. The great thing about the innovation that we had was that, you know, although when you time lock, you can't use your Bitcoins. If I time lock for a month, I can't then, you're like, hey, Brendan, send me a Bitcoin. I can't do that until the time lock expires, right? Just part of how UTXOs on Bitcoin work. But the awesome thing is that your Bitcoin is, when you do a time lock transaction in your own wallet, there's no, it's under your private key, right? Mm-hmm. So you haven't sent Bitcoin to anyone. There's no multi-sig. There's literally no risk of anyone taking your Bitcoin, period. If the core blockchain, which will not happen, but if it went down tomorrow, your Bitcoin's fine. Time lock expires, it's in your wallet, right? You redeem it and you get it back. And that was really interesting because it brought yield to Bitcoin for the first time ever in a permissionless fashion that didn't require centralized entities doing lend borrow or finding other ways, because people have wanted yield on Bitcoin forever. It just hasn't quite been sustainable. And then that's what kind of led to the first ETFs in Europe. Mm. So to be clear, we don't issue the ETFs, but we've partnered with a group called Valor that has launched some Bitcoin yield ETFs. So in addition to buying Bitcoin through an ETF, it has a base yield, which is powered by this staking function, which was pretty unreal. You know, it was a big achievement. I think it you know, the latest one went live on the London Stock Exchange, which was a big win and worked on for a long time. And then eventually down the road, you know, see that coming to the US. I think there'll be a variety of options that provide yield, but you know, they're already talking about staking ETFs for Ethereum. I'm not sure if those were approved, but I think books have put in applications. You know, you could see something in the future, you know, having similar options or instruments for Bitcoin. Yeah.
Well, I think the listeners are probably tuning in and they're going, how does that work? You know, staking, yield, lending, returns on Bitcoin. You know, maybe they're a little bit more used to that on Ethereum or Solana. But I think the idea of that being possible and being a reality on Bitcoin is probably something that they're maybe scratching their heads about. So can you explain like how Core has enabled those kind of DeFi features on Bitcoin or with Bitcoin?
Yeah. So the staking function itself, I wouldn't even call it DeFi, right? That's just using, you know, it's similar to, if these Bitcoiners are up on Ordinals or Taproot, the Taproot upgrade that happened a couple of years ago, it allowed you to add more data into Bitcoin block headers, right? Which made it readable, which enabled these cool things like Ordinals and JPEGs that could be put into Bitcoin. That upgrade allowed us to do this time lock transactions where we can put this data in for staking. And to us, that's like crawl, walk, run. A lot of Bitcoiners are just like, I'm keeping my Bitcoin in cold storage forever and not doing anything. This is a great way to crawl, walk, run. Like, we're not asking you to bring your Bitcoin on chain, trust bridges, move it through exchanges. You're time locking it in your own wallet, and you can use a Ledger wallet, a hardware wallet, which is pretty awesome. If we get into DeFi, how the DeFi works is, so the chain's secured by those stakers. The chain itself is EVM. So basically what you do is move your Bitcoin onto the core chain. You could do that through a variety of partners that we have, like Solve. I forget, there's like a million BTCs. There's Threshold. There's a variety of Bitcoins that you can bring, wrapped Bitcoin that you can bring on chain, that have various methods to do that. Some are like big multi-sigs, others rely on custodians. It depends what your risk tolerance is, but you bring your Bitcoin on chain, then you can do things with it. You could put it into a lend borrow market and earn interest, or borrow stable coins against it. So you deposit some Bitcoin, borrow stable coins, go do that, put a down payment on a house if you want, and get rates that are typically half the price of what you get with like a private bank. But that's how it generally works. And then obviously we have the core token itself. So there's DeFi functionality with stable coins, core token, but primarily most of the products being built on Bitcoin as a Bitcoin sidechain are some things that involve Bitcoin in some way.
You know, I was just thinking about who might resonate the most with this. And maybe the answer is both here, but who would you say that you cater the most to? Because people usually hear about Bitcoin-related products, and I think the initial reaction is maybe this is more for Bitcoin maxis. But then you have some of the DeFi features, and you're like, well, that probably resonates with some of the DeFi community, who I would say is probably largely more so towards maybe Ethereum or, you know, some of those other chains. I guess who would you say you cater to the most, and who do you get the most attention from? Between the two parties of like Bitcoin maximalists or maybe the DeFi people?
I think it'll be somewhat surprising. I mean, Bitcoin maximalists are just not going to bother, right? They're very much in the camp of cold storage, never use Bitcoin. But I think the thing that we've learned and what we'll see is, although that group is pretty loud on crypto Twitter or X, they don't represent the entire Bitcoin community. Right. That's fine. I mean, if it's, you know, cold storage, that's great. But that's actually not the majority of the Bitcoin community or folks that have Bitcoin. A lot of folks want to do things with it or are actively exploring. You know, for example, if you were at Bitcoin Investor Week 2 weeks ago, every digital asset treasury company in the world is looking to do stuff with their Bitcoin. Obviously, they have to. You'd also talk about how poorly those businesses have performed. I get that. I don't want to comment. I'm just saying that a lot of folks generally are looking to do things, but Bitcoiners are a lot more risk off than an ETH person, and definitely someone from Solana, right? They just they want to bet things a bit more closely. But I think there's some pent-up demand to do things. Surprisingly, I think there's more product market fit with institutions. That are holding their Bitcoin in custody, they're actively looking to do things with Bitcoin and wanting to do things. And I think they're actually a bit more further down the curve right now in terms of trying to do things on chain.
Well, you just mentioned institutions, which raises, I guess, a whole nother addressable market. Because there's the idea of like, yeah, we can pitch this, or you can pitch this to retail and they can use it. I think a really big market is, can you or are you also pitching this to the institutional side? Like, is that something that we could see? You know, whether it's an asset manager, whether it's a bank, whether it's a crypto company, whatever it may be, from an institutional standpoint, I would say even, you know, into like the big ETF providers, like, could they look at maybe using core or the features of it to try to increase their yield on their Bitcoin or something along those lines?
Absolutely. I mean, that's, we're working the institutional market, you know, educating folks. We've talked to all the ETF providers. Those are longer conversations. The reality is institutions, anything with Bitcoin is like measure three times, cut once. But absolutely. And I think that our main focus there on a product that has been worked on internally is basically a Bitcoin yield product that will be managed professionally, use other strategies or yield strategies, including Core's dual staking. There'll be some exposure there. It'll mint a token and rebase, similar to like a staked ETH token. So you'll get your Bitcoin on chain that you can deploy on Core and then eventually other chains, and it'll have a native yield built in. And that's pretty interesting just as a collateral asset. It flips a lot of the economics, and we see a lot of demand and interest there on the institutional side. On the retail side, we're still very bullish. We just think the products look a little different. So the product that we're working on there, and you can check this out on Twitter, is a product called SatPay. So SatPay is almost like you mentioned, you actually kind of covered this initially, where you had said, oh, you know, most crypto users, they don't want to deal with the hassle of this and all this stuff, and it's really complicated. So what we've done is basically created a simple mobile app. You could use the term neobank, but it's like a Bitcoin neobank that has a savings account for Bitcoin. So you can deposit Bitcoin, earn interest. You can take a loan out against your Bitcoin, which is powered by DeFi, and you can spend stables or spend Bitcoin. I think most people spend stables, frankly, on a card. And then a variety of other features will come soon, but that's the basics of it. But it basically like puts a nice interface on a lot of these dApps that are already built on Core, where you don't have to go through the five different apps, figure out how to connect, manage them all. It's just a very simplified, streamlined, easy to use app called SatPay, and it will be launching at the beginning of April.
I think the more we can remove the barrier to entry, the better it will be for, because that's what a lot of people want, right? They want to be able to come in and they shouldn't have to know, oh, I'm using blockchain, or oh, I need to know all these different things. I think the more that we can just have people come in and just get value out of using the technology, I think that's where a lot of the benefit comes from. And so we love hearing about products like those. But, you know, one of the, I guess the final questions is, because we've talked, at least final questions on this topic, because we talked a lot about, you know, hey, Bitcoin can evolve and how you are evolving it. But in your ultimate perfect world for you personally, how do you see Bitcoin evolving as it kind of moves into the future? What do you want to see the most?
Ooh, that's, I mean, there's a lot there. I want to see Bitcoin market cap continue to grow. I want to see it be adopted by you know, governments, more corporations worldwide, more individuals, because I think it brings a lot of power to individual holders. And it's a money that, again, can't be corrupted by any centralized entity, the tinfoil hat coming out. But I think the bigger thing and the thing, you know, the reason I actually joined the Core project is, although I think like TradFi used stuff around Bitcoin is going to be built up, you'll eventually buy your ETF, you'll be able to take a loan based on margin, but it's all going to be done through your bank. And I'd love to see a world where there is a parallel path that is built on DeFi and easy to use permissionless systems. Whether that's, you know, side chains, etc. I really believe that like custodying your own Bitcoin is something that, you know, folks should do, and not, you know, kind of defeats the purpose of every Bitcoin is sitting in a bank, and you know, you take out your margin loan against it. So yeah, the TLDR there, you asked like what I'd like to see. I'd like to see this parallel system where there's a ton of utility and ways that you could put your Bitcoin to work in, you know, it's like the backbone of a new finance system, but you actually custody and you have the control of the asset yourself.
You know what's wild? How many guys hit their 30s and suddenly everything feels harder than it used to? Your energy dips, the focus isn't there anymore, and gym progress stalls. The conversation almost always turns to testosterone. So I've spent a lot of time digging into this, not just the headlines, but actual studies, ingredients, research, and talking to people who've gone down the TRT road. And once you really understand what traditional TRT involves, it includes lifelong injections with needles, shutting down your body's natural production, fertility concerns, and it really makes guys pause. That's why I've been paying attention to Mars Men. It's designed as a TRT alternative, not injections, not synthetics, just a stack of well-researched ingredients like Tonga Ali, zinc, and boron that are used to support healthy testosterone function. I've seen the science behind these ingredients, and I personally know guys using it who say they love how steady their energy feels. No spikes, no crashes, and no needles. For a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, plus free shipping and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. Mars Men is made in the USA, third-party tested, and backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. Over 91% of its users report higher energy levels, and the reviews speak for themselves. And again, for a limited time, our listeners get 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts at mengotomars.com. That's mengotomars.com for 50% off for life, free shipping, and 3 free gifts. After checkout, make sure you tell them that Crypto 101 sent you.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
So what do you think about, I guess, moving away from Bitcoin, what do you think about altcoins, right? You work obviously a lot with Bitcoin. We've talked a lot about Bitcoin. What are your thoughts about altcoins? Do they have a place?
Well, I mean, Core is an altcoin. So, I mean,
I guess that's fair.
I love altcoins.
That's a fair point.
No, but I mean, I'm not a coin trader or you know, these things. I'm very bullish on what I know, which is, you know, we take the best of everything. I'm a big ETH guy as well. I think EVM was great. I've dabbled in Solana as well. Obviously, though, I'm a Bitcoiner at heart. But I think that most altcoins, like, don't need to exist. That's my contrarian take, although I don't think it's that contrarian. I think if you're a blockchain, you kind of need a token to bootstrap your chain or find any way of incentivizing security or getting users. So I think, you know, blockchain alt tokens are necessary to get things moving. I think at the dApp level and a variety of other things, I don't understand. You know, a lot of them don't even need tokens. And I think people are rethinking that now. You know, rethinking different models, focusing more on revenue. This is at the dApp level, of course. So I think we're entering a pretty interesting time. But I think there's some altcoins that have very serious utility, and there's some that don't.
I would agree with the revenue part. I think that we need and we should see projects more focused on revenue. That was one of the things about the past, is that you had a lot of projects who would promise things and say, hey, we're going to do this years out. We're going to get there and we're going to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And it was more of like, hey guys, this is a dream down the road, where I think that now, again, you know, we should really be focused on, no, like, this is a project and a company, and here's the product, here's the service, here's the revenue. And I do think that that will hopefully be an increasingly more important thing to new projects that are formed as well. But from what I'm hearing,
it's changing. I think it's changing. I mean, the thing there is token incentives. So maybe maybe it's not so much the token, but in that example you describe, it's like, I get, you know, not me personally, but you start that project, you get paid up front in tokens for promises of the future. That's literally the opposite of every tech business ever built.
It is.
Like, way in Web 2, it's literally the opposite. You have no liquidity for 10 years. You work your ass off. You always are trying to get to the next thing with no liquidity.
Yeah.
And then here it's been flipped the other way. It's like, no wonder a lot of stuff doesn't get delivered. I mean, you already launched your token and this stuff, right? So I think a lot of that's being rethought right now. And it's just part of like a market maturing, because this market's pretty young. And I think it's going to lead to really great things.
Yeah, I would agree. It's there are a lot of differences, and I think we've sorted out a lot of them, but we still have a lot more to sort out. I mean, you mentioned how the way that tokens work are kind of the opposite of early stage tech. And then there's also not quite as much limits and maybe regulations on, you know, hey, some of these people can have the vast majority of the supply, and then they can also sell as much as they want. They don't have to disclose them. There's no like execution dates. Like if you're a big executive of a large cap publicly traded company, it's like, okay, well, you have to sell at these specific dates. You have to disclose it. There's all these things that kind of go into it, right? And so that's another thing that you don't see in crypto that honestly has hurt, quite a few altcoin projects where they're doing good, but then they either have too much inflation or they have too much maybe insider selling or whatever it may be. And that ultimately can act as a negative catalyst. Not always, right? There's plenty that do succeed. But it'll be interesting to see as crypto sorts this stuff out. And I think it's coming, right? You know, at least from a bit more of like an institutional standpoint, people are looking at like the overall market structure bill, hoping that, you know, just one aspect of that is the Clarity Act, but there's different aspects of it saying, hey, you know, we kind of hope that that sheds some light and clarifies what is and what can be done.
Yeah. Do you think it'll get passed?
You know, that's the age old question. I do. I think it will get passed. The question is, do we think it'll get passed this year? I would lean into yes. I think that we have a decent chance. You know, right now, last time I checked, the odds were like around 50% on Polymarket. I would think that there's a lot of pressure, and this is just where my brain's at, is that there's a lot of pressure onto the crypto market. It's down, it's beaten up. People are waiting on this kind of thing. I'm not saying it's going to be like the savior, like the moment that this thing gets passed, we're going back to $120,000 Bitcoin. I don't think it'll be something like that, but I think it sets us up for long-term success. And I think it certainly sets us up for an increase in liquidity over an extended period of time. And so I think that there's, you know, there's all sorts of different things you can look at, whether it's saying, hey, we're going into midterms. There's probably pressure on some of those politicians who want to run.
I think that's the big thing, is the window almost seems to do it before the midterms. If not, it just might get stuck in bureaucracy or something. So
I would certainly agree with that and say the window here is get this thing passed before midterms. Otherwise, it could kind of float away for maybe a more extended period of time.
Yeah.
I do think that it gets passed personally. I think that you'll see both sides, the banks and those kind of crypto native companies. I think you'll kind of see both of them give and take, but it seems like they both want it. They just disagree about how it should be written. And so I think because they both want it, and one's not like adamantly like, we don't want any of this crypto market structure stuff, they disagree about a few smaller things, you know, in regards to stable coins and yields like that. But I think that they ultimately both want it. And so I think because of that, they'll be willing to compromise. My thought here is probably as we lead into spring and summer, but I think once you start getting the fall, I would start being nervous if it wasn't around by fall.
Let's see what happens.
We'll have to see what happens. I guess final things just about the market as a whole here. I mean, again, you've been involved with this stuff for a while. You have a lot of just business and tech experience and everything. I mean, what do you make about all this? We were going back and forth before the pod started, just, you know, getting to know each other and doing a little back and forth banter about different things. But, you know, one of my things that I said to you is I feel like we're somewhat disconnected in the sense that the technicals maybe don't fully reflect some of the fundamentals. But then, you know, looking back, you know, the crypto market's always been volatile and it doesn't always have to necessarily make complete sense. But I mean, what do you make about all this?
I think I just mute myself for a bit there. But yeah, I think, so first of all, I'll just preface, I don't know. I mean, I've never been a trader. I've been, you know, held through multiple cycles at this point. I've never timed it or sold the top or done any of this stuff. So my perspective is I'm just very bullish on the technology, especially Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And anything related and honestly Ethereum too. You know, I just think it's better technology. it's continued to grow. We may not have the same financial returns as like the last 10 years, but mm-hmm. I think that there's going to be more and more adoption, more use cases, and price will do just fine. So our view, I mean, at core, I can tell you our view is just, yeah. You know, we're just heads down. Don't worry about the noise. I've built through stuff in Web 2 as well. You know, you lose a contract or you grow a business the wrong way and have to even lay some people off, and you just kind of dial in and focus and wait for PMF to come or products to take off or things to improve. And I think this is the point where you just put your head down and work. But I just think everything's moving in the right direction. In terms of like how to trade this right now, I can't be helpful. I'm curious for your thoughts. It's not really my forte, honestly. I think we were saying we would dollar cost average. I mean, you've seen a crazy correction. I mean, I'd be looking at Bitcoin, I've told friends and family this, regardless of price, just buy a bit, you know, don't try and time this stuff. Just allocate every week or 2 weeks and keep that as your strategy. And now is a good time to do that.
Yeah, I think for the average person, you should just look at dollar cost averaging. You know, it's simple, it's easy.
I agree.
If you believe in this long term, don't overcomplicate it. Everyone wants to overcomplicate it, especially I think for some people, you know, there's a time and a place. But if you don't have the time or the resources or the knowledge, don't trick yourself into thinking that all of a sudden you do and that all of a sudden you can outsmart the market. Just if you don't have the time, the knowledge and the resources and all these things and you have a busy life and you really do believe in Bitcoin and crypto long term, you can just look at a dollar cost average saying, hey, I don't care what happens in the next week, the next month, the next year, even the next several years. You don't care. You're focused on the long term. You can buy a little bit every day or every week or, you know, I don't know, who knows, every other week or whatever you want it to be. And you can just keep it simple because historically, you know, that's always been a really favorable thing to do on Bitcoin, especially in deep corrections. And that's kind of our viewpoint at it. It's just saying, hey, guys, we're here to kind of present what's happening behind the scenes. We're here to present the bigger picture, all the stuff that's going on, make you all, the individuals, as informed as possible so that you can, again, understand why you're interested in investing in this in the first place. So we have a very zoomed out kind of macro bird's eye view perspective on this. But I think I can speak for both of us here when I say we don't think crypto is going anywhere, right? We think Bitcoin and crypto as a whole is going to be able to be around for a long time. And that's why we both work in it. But
yeah, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Brendan, we appreciate you coming on here. Where can people find out more about what you're doing at Core? Maybe any social pages for yourself as well. What's the best place to find you?
Yeah, so the best place is Twitter. The group at Core is awesome. And you can learn about SatPay there and then any upcoming Bitcoin yield launches and other cool products that are launching on Core. But you can check that out on Twitter at CoreDAO, so CoreDAO_org. ORG. So follow, there's like 2 million followers, a lot of engagement, an awesome account. And the website's the same, almost. So coredao.org. And I'm also on Twitter under the CoreDAO account. So if you really want to find me, I know tweet. I'm not that active on X, but I will share product updates a lot. So that's the best spot.
Perfect. Well, Brendan, once again, thank you for joining us and we appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks, Brendan.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.